Hello, I'm Carrie Gard, and welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders. Welcome back to the show. Excited you're here, as always. If you are here with us in this moment, try and buy us a little time to get people on and situated, because the beautiful thing about being live is we get to see who's here and answer your questions and have this more be less about just Lisa and I hanging out and more about a community of people trying to understand a topic and digging into it. So if you're here with us, please say hello. Let us know you've joined. Even if you're joining late, that's cool. Chime on in. And please ask all the questions in all of the land so we can make sure you can leave feeling like you know how to go do this thing, because you have an expert here and you should lean into that. It's going to be awesome. I had a similar conversation with Brian Grove a few weeks back. If you listen to that conversation and have questions, this is a great opportunity to bring those to Lisa and I. It's also the difference between Brian and Lisa is that Brian spoke from a researcher lens. I talked to a bunch of people. This is how they approach it, where we're going to talk to an expert who actually does this thing. So it's similar but different in terms of the conversation we're going to have. And we want your questions. So bring it. Bring it.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of being live. Lisa,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. Usually I do this like, this is Lisa and this is her background. But really, at the end of the day, you do a better job of saying that. So tell us your story, Lisa. What do you do and how did you get there?
Yeah, well, at first I was a little intimidated by you calling me an expert, but I did listen to last week when you and Brian were talking about, 10,000 hours, and then I literally got out a calculator, well, opened the calculator app on my computer, let's be real, and did the math. And I was like, 5 years, give or take. Okay. All right. Put that hat on. Yeah. Here we go. I don't know everything, but I've been doing it. So yeah.
10,000. It's true. It's true. 10,000 hours. So talk to us about those 10,000 hours and what you've been doing in the last 5 years to get you from point A to point B.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. So I think, yeah, just, I mean, the quick, I guess, Cliff's Notes version of my career. I started out in marketing from college, right after college, and then kind of did that, the out of school thing where you're like figuring out what you want to do. But I was lucky enough to kind of jump into a sales and marketing support role. So I really have liked it from the start. The only little stint I took in between marketing was I was a professional photographer for 7 years when my son was little. So it was perfect for our life, because, then it was like I could kind of schedule around my husband at the time, his schedule, and be with my son a lot. So that worked well. And then he went back to school and I kind of said, maybe health insurance and a paycheck and not working nights and weekends might be nice again. So I got back into B2B marketing, kind of did a transition out of photography slowly. And it's so fun looking back, because I still see people, sharing the pictures I took of them on Facebook. And every once in a while, someone will reach out and be like, are you still doing it? Could you, can you work for us? And so I'm like, it's Texas. It's hot out there. I'm over it.
Amen, sister, about that. I did wedding photography. This is cool, and I'm good and fulfilled.
Yeah.
And moving on. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So then when I got back fully into marketing, I got kind of into the B2B SaaS tech space around 2015. Although looking back, I was like, it really feels like it has been like 20 years. Because I think we joke about it being like B2B tech SaaS world is like dog years, in marketing. So I'm like, well, how many years is that? So I'm like, it feels like 50 years probably in that world.
Yeah, it's true. It moves so fast. Trevor, hello. We got Trevor Van Warden with us. Want to call that out?
Trevor. Yes, he introduced us, I think.
He did.
Yes.
Oh, so grateful for that. All right. So you did photography for a bit. You got back into the SaaS world. And then Where are you today?
What do you focus on? I've worked for, I mean, since I've kind of gotten into the tech world, I've worked for companies that have run ad tech, low code app dev, RPA, so robotic process automation, intelligent automation, cloud data, ETL. So that's kind of like my world. And now, you know, this far in, I finally feel like I'm sort of understanding it, so, which is good. So I think, I guess jumping now to what I'm doing now. So I was part of a big layoff this spring. And so 5 days later, I decided I was going to just go ahead and launch my own marketing consulting business. And so that has been going great so far, other than kind of like what we talked about with photography. Well, I don't know if we talked about it, but part of what I didn't love about photography is that you're like managing your own marketing and finance and, you know, everything. So I'm, kind of like, do I like all these hats or might I be interested in going back to full-time eventually? We'll see. But I am also giving myself a minute because I'm like, every time you do something new, it's always hard to start. So, you know, let's give it a minute, see how we like it, see if we can get in the groove. So that's where I'm at.
I also feel like you probably learned so much from owning your business as a photographer to today. Like, running a photography company isn't just about taking pretty pictures, y'all. Let me tell you, it's not that. That's like a fraction of the job. There's so much that goes into getting the work, tracking down the work, and then sustaining the work, and then actually doing the, like, there's all this work to you before even doing the work. It's finance, sales, and the product all before you actually take a photograph. It's wild. And so much from a business orchestration that you figure out. So it sounds like you get to merge the world's marketing and knowing how to run a business.
It is funny because I feel like after I got out of photography and got back into marketing, it was like, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. And I'm like, oh, I wish I knew then what I know now from working with all these really smart people. And now I'm like, I started my own business and I'm like, oh, I guess I get to take all that stuff that I learned and do it now. So it's a lot of it, like, you know, so one of the things that it was like, I wish I would have known then, like how to let go of the things I didn't like to do and hire those out. But you kind of, it's like chicken eggy, because you're like, I have to trust that if I pay someone to do the work I don't want to do, that more of the work I want is going to come to me. So that's the space I'm in now, is just, and then also like, do I want to manage people and do I want to, you know, so then there's those decisions of like, do I want to make it kind of an agency model? Anyway, we could get all into that, but yeah, it's just a lot of learning, but it's really good of how I've been able to learn from the different spaces and bring them together. Yeah.
We'll take that offline. Yeah, I got you. It's cool. I've lived both worlds. It's cool. Let's talk about a challenge you're currently facing. So you're a solopreneur. You're on this cusp of do I, don't I, but you are doing work right now. So two questions for you. One is, what work are you currently doing? And what's one challenge you're currently facing in that work?
Let's see. I mean, I think it's like just what we talked about, where I'm trying to balance the, you know, wearing all the hats plus getting into having multiple clients. So it's just like trying to figure out how to have the brain space for those. And, you know, I think I have a lot of learning to do about wearing more of a fractional leader role. And then also, I think, what was the other thing I was thinking of? Yeah, just kind of how to manage all that. Oh, and then how to be more of a consultant versus a doer. Cause I tend to like, my natural tendency is to get into the weeds and want to be like, let me just do it for you. And it's like, that's not actually the work that I like. Just sometimes it's easier than having to explain it or train someone. So that's where I'm at, kind of as the challenge, I think, right now.
Yeah. We have something called SOPs, which is operating procedures. Service operating procedures, right? So like getting down, how do I actually do this thing? And if I was to step-by-step process it, what would that look like? Loom is your friend. Loom is everybody's friend. Trevor knows Loom is your friend. train all the people and all of the things, because it does help you scale. But it is hard to, it's so hard. to let go. Yeah.
Well, and I think too, the way that I stepped into this consulting role was, and I've heard this from tons of people that I've talked to, is I said, hey, everyone, I'm launching a marketing consulting business. And it's kind of like when you sit at a table with 10 people and say, what is account-based marketing to you? You'll get 10 different answers. So when you put it out to the world and say, I'm doing marketing, you get 10 different things that people want or need, you know? And so then I'm kind of saying, well, do I take the business because you want to work with me? Or do I say, no, I don't really do that? You know, so some of it's kind of figuring out now, you know, how do I figure out what is it that I want to offer and then productize it versus always kind of being in the space of trying to figure it out. So, yeah.
I kind of love the world. I'm sorry, we're going to tangent here for folks. Yeah, because we are. Because it is this weird transition that you have to make from being a figure it outer to knowing then what works and then being able to train other folks. But with the way that the marketing world is moving so fast right now, and Trevor, I'm going to come back to your question because I think that's an excellent one and I want to know more about that too. But I think in the way that marketing is moving so quickly that we all end up being these figure it outers, but there are these tried and true situations that do become the SOPs that then you can train other folks. But it is a delicate balancing act. So how are you like are approaching these things from, are you still living, do you want to be a figure it outer or do you like, I'm a figure it outer because I have to be, but I like really want to stop being, like what's sort of your feeling on going back to what you know, but knowing what you need to like that next step you need to take?
Yeah, I'm right in the middle of figuring that out. Like literally today, shower thoughts were like about this, you know, about how do I kind of and I had a great conversation with another marketer who kind of launched into the same world at the same time that I did this spring. And so it was really helpful to bounce some ideas. And some of it's just like, I got to come back out of the weeds and I got to think back to when I started working with a client, what did I tell them we were going to do? And then we've kind of like lost track of that. So it's like, we got to reset. We got to come back to this. And then, so the builder doer kind of question was, I think it's getting people to kind of trust that you know what you're doing. Cause some of it has been like, that didn't work immediately. Let's try something else. And you kind of have to balance the, like, you got to give it a minute. We also got to do what we said we were going to do. But I think for me personally, I really like being I was actually going to talk to you about this because I thought of this as like a random other question that we could talk about because I saw you just posted about Ted Lasso. and so one of my questions I was thinking through is like, and I was going to ask you if you could be any of the characters on the show, like who are you closest to being? Do you have an idea off the top of your head which character you're most like?
I'm a little bit, I'm mostly Ted. I'm that like that tried and true believe mentality. I can't play football to save my life, but I can see who can. And I'm going to put those players in motion and go team. Got a little Roy Kent in me in those moments of like, oi! Right? Like those.
Let moments. Me get out the bleep button. Hold on.
Yeah, totally. And then I also got a little Jamie Tart in me of like when I can see it's like total football, right? And I can see the pitch and I can see where all the players are moving and I know how to, I'm not a scorer, but I know how to pass the ball really well. And so like I got a little bit of those three, I think, mixture. How about you?
That's healthy. I have been thinking about it just actually today. Probably the closest one. Not in all facets, but Beard, Coach Beard, is probably my one that I most am like, if I had to say, you know, who I'm similar to. And I think it's because, and it's kind of a funny way to say it, but my whole life I've always been a really good number two. I like someone else to kind of make the big decisions. And then I'm like, I agree or I disagree. And, you know, if I agree, we come together. I'm with you. And then let me go do it. So I'm usually the person that's like, okay, in the leadership, you know, head of the company discussion, we're trying to do this. And then I'm like, okay, let's go. We got to do that. Let's figure out what are the tasks and steps and teams we got to pull together to get those things to happen. So I think right now why I'm feeling a little off kilter is because I'm going into companies and I'm having to be the marketer, and I'm used to being in a role that's like on a team going for something that we've all already agreed on versus like, what's the plan? So
yeah, that's totally different. Oh, it is like being Coach Beard trying to step into being Lasso. That is, you know what? Here's a reframe I will give you, whether it works for you or not. Oh, Danny, you are totally Danny. Football for life. Yes, football is life. Yes, Trevor. I love that. Here's a reframe I will serve, and you take it or leave it. But it feels like you need to be less of a Coach Beard and more of a Roy, not from the world is ending and I hate everything, but more from, right? He takes Jamie and cultivates him, right? And then allows him to be a better player. But more so that he's gearing up to be Ted, right? Mm-hmm. So like they never quite serve it that way in the show. Spoiler alert. They never quite serve it up that way in the show, but like that was always felt like the trajectory that they were going to bring Roy in to essentially take over for Ted. And I think that's like, he is a number two for a while, but not forever. Where Beard is always going to be a number two. We love Beard for that, but like, you know, he's always going to be blowing the whistle and like just repeating Ted, where Roy is stepping into that role. And I think
I really like that. And actually, it's really funny because there's something in characters that are like just brashly straightforward with what they think and what they want to say. And I've always admired that. And I've never, you know, it's been like I wish I could be more like that. So yeah. Okay. I'll own that. F yeah.
This is after hours. We can own it. I love it. Especially if you're going to Roy it out, man. That's amazing. I think that's a really hard challenge, right? That's a huge, it took me years to move through that. I was number two. I was the COO at my organization before I became CEO. I was that number two. I saw the vision of what was trying to be done, and then I could figure out the players and the motions and then put in place to make it happen. And then I was like, no, like I can see the bigger picture. There's this moment that sort of happened for me, where I was like, oh, I can see how these things all need to fit together and I need to step in to make it all happen. But I wasn't ready until I was ready. And, you know, I think it's just being open to that. Yes, it's transition. It's hard. It's going from like marketing manager, VP to like CMO. Like that's a huge leap. That's a big leap.
Yeah.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. Let's talk about influencer marketing. I had a great conversation. You brought this up with me in my prep. So thank you for doing my prep for me. That was fantastic. I had a conversation with Brian Grover a few weeks ago about, I've been having multiple conversations throughout my show these last few weeks about influencer marketing in different ways. Brian and I specifically talked about it as a channel, which is what we're going to talk about today. But I want to be really clear in setting the stage for this, in that Brian says in the onset of our conversation, he never has actually done this. He has had multiple conversations with folks. He's done a ton of research to figure out how to approach this. And now he's writing a book about it. But now I get to sit down with an expert who's like done it. So we get to come at it from a different angle. And I think it's really helpful as we all think about what influencer marketing could mean for our brands. Trevor and I have a ton of conversations about this. Actually, Trevor's going to be on my show, y'all. Get ready.
Yes.
November. Good. Trevor Van Worden, come to tea time. It's going to be great. And one of the things we're talking about is how to position sort of that evangelist influencer within the organization to be that Jamie Tart of it all, right? So coming back to Ted Lasso, because that's just what's going to happen at the show as we, touch into. It's going to be great. Into touch. It's great. So for influencer marketing for you, Lisa, the Brian conversation happened and that was great, but let's talk about how it relates for you. And if there's repetition, that's okay. Like there's going to be overlap, but it's great to hear from multiple perspectives. What does influencer marketing mean from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, so I think for me, the work that I've done is a little bit different than when someone says influencer marketing. I think you guys kind of talked about that, like B2C is definitely its own thing for me. And I think what we're talking about specifically, and I don't really know what to call it because it's sort of, it has elements of influencer, but like the programs that I've run, as an example, we worked with a company, an organization that was more of, I would say, like an analyst firm. Hmm. So they sat in the space that we were in. They talked about data, cloud architecture, moving to the cloud, that kind of stuff. And so we ended up partnering with Kevin Petrie is his name, Eckerson, shout out. We love you. So super smart guy, very knowledgeable about the industry. And we partnered with him to create some content. So mostly it was white papers. And then, of course, you know, the marketing campaigns thing that you do, we created some derivative content. We worked with him on a webinar. I'm trying to think. I think we had him come speak at an event. So it's, you know, kind of a little bit different than the, hey, just go and talk about the company or the industry or the topic, put it on social media. It was like, we really partnered with him to create content. And I was thinking about too, how normally as a company, we create tons of content, but it's like, we have all these kind of anonymous people internally that are doing research, talking to people, and then you're putting it out as, you know, this is like from the company. And so I think the little tiny difference is that you're actually basing some, adding some clout behind the content based on who's saying it. So it's like, ideally, you're partnering with people who are known in the industry, have some of their own audience that you can kind of audience jack or, you know, take advantage of. And then that they're putting their seal on it, where if they're a trusted name, hopefully, you know, that's adding to the value of the of whatever it is they're saying. And then I think too, as long as it's presented in the right way, it's like people trust them because they're a third party who knows what they're talking about. And then they are talking about your space, usually, you know, creating a guide or, you know, hey, if you're searching for this technology, here are the questions you should be asking a vendor, and here's what you need to be thinking about, and here's how you should build your team to support this new initiative. And then, by the way, there is this technology called, you know, XYZ, and they can help you do that. So they're one of the options. So,
yeah,
that's kind of a little bit, I think, of the nuance, in, I guess what we're talking about more than the, you know, someone that you know, who's just going to be posting on social and that kind of thing.
Oh, good question from Trevor. Audiences are fickle, though. Are the thought leader promotion posts viable for influencer marketing?
Well, and I think that's where there's that nuance where it's like, is this actually influencer marketing or is it something else? Is it thought leader? Is it, you know, is there a difference, I guess?
So
is there a place where we draw the line?
Yeah. So here's the line I will draw. Agree, disagree. Let's hash it out here, Lisa. Influencer marketing for me is an outside person who feels one way about the topic. They're probably not always, I shouldn't say that. Thought leader for me comes from inside the organization in one way or another, mm-hmm. versus influencer, which can, you know, as Brian and I talked about, could come from inside the organization, but they sort of set up their own audience and like who they are and what they talk about outside, and then they come inside and then talk about it. So it is like a slippery slope, but I feel like influencer is more taking the brand idea and then launching it versus being inside the brand, cultivating it from the ground up, and then bringing it to fruition from a thought leadership standpoint of trying to change someone's mind. Different, but the same, just of who's saying it.
Yeah. And I think, and that's one of the things that I was thinking about is like kind of who is the person. And I think it's someone who is a lot more like an analyst or a industry strategic thinker, more of a consultant. So they could go in and if someone said, this is the problem we're trying to solve, they would say, you know, this is the approach you should take. And maybe here's like a handful of the choices of the tech that you should check out or people you should talk to. And then I was also going to say, one of the things I think that makes these sort of influencers or analysts the most successful is that I've seen a correlation between the more snarky they are, the more the audience trusts them. But it's kind of a prickly thing that you kind of want to work with snarky people, but then you're also sort of like afraid of what they're going to say. So it's like a fine line.
No, but that's true, because if they're willing to push back a little bit and they're willing to stake their claim of like what's true for them, what's not, but then still represent a brand, I think that does absolutely build that trust. And I think that's the beauty of being an influencer versus working for the company, right? If you're working for the company, chances are you're not really gonna push that line. Where if you're outside of the company, being brought in to analyze, oh man, I haven't heard that word either. Like calling an influencer an analyst. Tell me more about like that language and how you see those two things as both the same but also separate. I mean, they're somewhat different ideas. Doing similar things.
Yeah, I think. And based on some of the comments that I'm seeing from Trevor, my opinion on this is that if you need to find people who either have done it or they know so much, they really know the audience, they can be in their shoes. And I don't know if this is just repeating kind of what I was saying, but yeah, that they're really just sort of someone who's looking at the industry as a whole and trying to understand the space. Like one of the people that I follow is the Marketing AI Institute. So, you know, as a marketer, that's someone I follow. And I don't know that I would necessarily call them an analyst, but it's Paul and Mike are the two main kind of people that are always talking. And it's like, they're just staying up on like, what's the news? What's the latest AI tech that's coming out? How are marketers using it? And so like 100% I trust what they're saying. And then I also see them partnering, like they get sponsorships. So they're kind of, you know, on the side being like, hey guys, check out this sponsor and, you know, what they're offering we think is pretty cool, honestly. And yes, they're paying us, you know, so that's the hard thing. And really the people that we've worked with, you know, and Kevin in particular has said, yes, I want to share what you guys are doing and your perspective. And I really need to put my audience first. So I'm not going to say anything that I don't believe is true. I'm not going to say you're better than someone else if I don't know it. But I think it's just like being able to get on their radar. And then my goal of the programs really, and this is one of the things as far as like a tip that I would say to bring to your organization, is that if you do start partnering with someone like this, and maybe we'll get to it when we're talking about kind of how you get started with them, but it's like the organization needs to understand how important it is, because it's like, I think one of the best, it's almost like a PR type move too. Cause it's like, you know, if I can get an analyst to use my company name, sort of like how we say Kleenex instead of tissues, you know, like if you can get someone to kind of say, if you're trying to solve this problem, like you need a XYZ company and they're like using your name as the generic, you know,
It's pretty magical if you make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like when you know you've made it. Yeah. That your name becomes an adjective. Brand name adjective. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. Let's talk about activating influencers and analysts. So the first thing is, where do you find these folks? Especially analysts is really curious. I'm really curious about that, because when Brian and I talked, it was more about influencers and combing LinkedIn and combing like Slack channels and communities. But for finding people who are more analytical in the space and the industry of looking at your product objectively, that seems like a different avenue in terms of alignment. So where do you find those folks?
Yeah, I think one of them I would say is ask the people on your team, because usually whoever is at your company, you know, product marketing, sales, you know, kind of all the folks on your own team are going to know who those people are in the space. And so, you know, you'll probably get 80% of the way there just asking around, because that's who they're paying attention to too, because it's like whoever's talking about the space and talking about your competition. And then the other one is like, pay attention to who's speaking at events. Like they're probably going to be giving keynotes and hello, guest. So they're going to be giving keynotes and that kind of thing. And then some of it's just, you know, searching for content like you're going to be putting out. So it's like, can I look for other white papers and see if there's a byline or see who's putting those out.
One program we did a long time ago, it was ages ago. We did it with VMware. We did an influencer program with Twitter. It will always be Twitter. My heart, it will always be Twitter. It was really, really cool. It was like the first influencer program we did. It was for, they were launching a new product and they needed beta testers. And so we did two things. The first thing is we found this amazing group. They were called VMUG. They were like a dedicated VMware community. Before communities were cool and everybody was doing them, there was a VMUG community. And so we were able to somehow tap into them through the magic. That was one of my employees, Adam Bullock, you magical human you. And so we did a email newsletter blast to them that said, hey, we're doing this program. If there's anybody interested in being a beta tester, you can beta test the product as long as you do a Twitter write-up for us on how it's going. And the people with the most, we gamified it. And we said the people with the most shares and the most likes and the most comments would then win a chance to be interviewed by one of the biggest VMware CTOs or whatever. And it was crazy, like, between the magic of tapping into the VMUG community, but then also tapping into their audience, because they all had individual audiences too on Twitter, like it exploded. It was wild. It was my first experience with like the power of this community and influencer. The other magic with it was like this trifecta. Well, I'll never recreate again. My wildest dreams. is that they were all experts in the field. So when you're talking about that analyst role of like, we were giving people an out, right? Like when we messaged to the community, we weren't signaling anybody out and saying, you need to go do this. It was like, hey, if there's anybody in this community who has the expertise in this thing and wants to beta test this product and also get out on Twitter and get some clout about it. Clout was a thing back then, that K-L-O-U-T. Let us know, and we'd love to have you part of this program. So it was this amazing thing that happened. I haven't been able to recreate it. I don't, maybe because I haven't had the right client or the right product or the right whatever. But it feels like that's sort of what you get to do on a regular basis. Content, community, influencer, people who are experts in their field who get to sort of decide how they show up here. Like, is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, and for me, and I was going to kind of talk to you about sometimes it is very, a lot more kind of project based where we're just kind of, hey, can we work with you on this one white paper and, you know, maybe do a webinar? And then it's sort of time bound. So we have to take advantage of that amount of time. But then sometimes it's like, hey, that went really well. Let's keep in touch with this person. And next quarter, we'll do the same thing because we had really great results. And then, you know, before you know it, they're like coming to our event and standing at our booth. And, you know, we're like tapping into their audience and their audience knows who we are because they say our name all the time, you know? So it's just sort of this nice, like, it just kind of keeps, you know, whereas the fourth program is going to be exponentially better than the first, just because we have all that momentum behind it.
There is this I Trevor does a really great job of this, and actually that's how we got connected too, is one of the tricks, the LinkedIn tricks and tips I took from Trevor, is stacking people who I've connection with and have, like, even with this post, right? When I wrote about it, I tagged people who I had similar conversations with to bring them in. And there's something magical about bringing folks together too who have similar viewpoints in terms of that influence analyst point of view. I love this idea of thinking about influencers as analysts, and I can't get over it, and I'm not going to, and we're going to move on. It's going to be great. Let's talk about what influencers do. So I mentioned, like, they wrote these tweets and they got the word out. You've mentioned content a bit. When you activate the analyst influencer community in terms of bringing them into a brand, what is it you're asking them to do?
Yeah, so I think I kind of mentioned it, but a few of the ones that we have started is the white paper or a buyer's guide, or usually it's, so when I'm thinking about content creation, and I know some people hate it because they hate gating content, but I'm like, it's, we're sort of in this world. And so we play the game because we need leads, because that's what we're measured on, you know, that kind of thing. But it's like, you know, but also I'm very, like, I'm an empathetic person. If anybody knows the Enneagram, I'm a 9. So I find it very easy to put myself in the shoes of my audience. For me, it's like, I don't want to put anything behind a gate unless someone, not necessarily that they would pay for it, but it's like that I'm providing them value. So do I put a demo behind a gate? No, because that's me wanting to say something to you. But if it's like, hey, here, if you're in the market for this solution, here are all these questions that we have curated and the stuff you need to think about. And, you know, it's just, it's like a helpful thing. So I usually am thinking about what can we create that would bring value to the audience and not just be like, look how great we are. You know, but teaching them something. So a lot of it is that kind of content or in that realm of, you know, being helpful. And then, you know, so thought leadership kind of stuff. But then we're also asking them participate on a webinar, a podcast, collaborate on short videos for social. So like one of the things that I try to do every time is if we're on a prep call where maybe we're getting close to launching the, if it's a white paper or we're doing the prep call for a webinar, I'll say, hey, can we record this part of the call? And you just do like a very quick, you know, hi, this is, you know, I'm this person and this is what I do. And I'm going to be doing this webinar with these people, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like kind of getting them to do like super low lift things that will add value to the campaign as a whole. Speaking at events. So if, like, for example, you know, we're going to be at the AWS summit and this person's going to be there, not with us, but on their own, like, hey, can we pay you extra to come to our booth and be available from 2 to 3? And then we promote that to get people to come just talk to the person in the booth. Obviously, if we can get them to speak during our session, even better. We're hosting a happy hour. Can you come and just be there? And that's a draw for people to come to the happy hour. And then, you know, we'll pay you to be there basically, but you could say whatever you want when you're there. It's not a commercial for us. It's really just, you know, giving people the opportunity to talk with you. And since you know about us, some people might want to talk to you, you know, and then we'll also likely have customers there who can reinforce, you know, if they really like our product, they're going to talk to you, which reinforces what you believe about our product. So it's kind of this creates a symbiotic relationship, I guess, by having them more involved with customers, our team, that kind of thing.
So the folks that you bring on to be influencers, do they actually use, I mean, it sounds like they have to really know the products if they're either writing content or they're out there speaking about it, or do they just get demos? Are they users? Do you find these folks as super fans of the product? Like, I don't think you could sort of just knock on someone's door who happens to be an expert in the space but has never used the product and expect them to like walk into an event and talk it up.
Yeah. And I think that's where it does get tricky to find the right people. And, you know, because it's a lot of times practitioners aren't the ones that are out there speaking and vice versa, you know, so it's like you have to find that little magical unicorn of a person who has, you know, done the thing and uses the tech. And like there's, I don't know if the audience is familiar with Corey Quinn is somebody that's coming to mind. He's really involved with AWS in that space. And he's definitely a user and he writes about his experience and he writes about AWS just released this and this is good or this is bad or, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like kind of no holds bar. But he's definitely a user. And so if you explain, you know, if maybe we're in an adjacent space, he'll get in there and try it. But then other people that we work with more on the analyst level, just, yeah, kind of have the broader understanding. So some of it's like, and that's part of, I think, the activation, which I was going to say is when, you know, we're bringing someone in to start to work with them, how important it is to get your CTO, your product marketers, like people in the company that are not only in the weeds, so they are, you know, working on the product and know it, but then they also understand where it fits in the market. So it's like your team that's, you know, it's the same exact process basically as when you're talking with Gartner to prep them and, you know, educate them and that kind of thing. It's, you kind of have to shift that mindset to, you know, we want to have this meeting of the minds to make sure this person understands where we sit in the space. And then, yeah, how we differentiate and how, you know, and the why behind why we created what we did. Because a lot of times that speaks to the differentiation, even down to like the values, because it's like what a company believes and what they're trying to accomplish is impacted a lot of times by what the values of the company are. And so it's, you know, kind of just getting them a little bit entrenched as much as you can, in the onboarding, but yeah, getting them to really get your vibe.
Well, they want to feel prepared. As well as your product. Imagine they want to feel prepared about being able to speak to it and speak to it intelligently. Mm-hmm. Who's responsible for finding the right folks and then onboarding them, bringing them in? Is that marketing? Is that this feels like a tall, like this unicorn you're sort of talking about, like, is it anybody who happens to come across this person who would be a perfect fit, or is it marketing or some sort of marketing arm sort of going out and being really intentional finding this person? Like, does influencer marketing happen because you're intentional about it and you go after it? Or is it more something that like, oh, this could be interesting because we have this right person who could do this thing that's unusual?
Yeah, that's the easy answer. But no, I've seen it work both ways where we sat down and strategized like, who can we work with? And let's go Google and find people and research. But then there's also like, you know, such and such that's in charge of product and they're out speaking and they're at customers. And, you know, so it's like they have those connections and then we can tap into like, hey, can you be our go-between? Make that intro, see how we could collaborate with this person, you know, and hopefully make it like a, you know, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. Like, you know, that that's the ideal is when you already have some sort of foundational relationship. But yeah, I mean, it's both. And a lot of times, you know, even if there is already that introduction, the role that I'm in is usually the program manager or facilitator of the relationship. So it's like, I'm saying, let me set up time with you, talk to your assistant, and then get together on the call. But I'm like prepping my people, like, this is what this call is for. And here's what I'm going to need you to tell them. And then here's where we're trying to go with that. So it's kind of a, you know, making the most of that relationship. So it's, I think in my role, it's definitely the putting on the program manager hat, and I've got my tasks in Asana and where we're trying to get to and what we're trying to produce. And so just making all those connections to get whatever, wherever we're trying to go, putting the boots on the ground to make it happen.
It's the best. It's the best. God, you said so many things in there that I want to unpack, but I also want to be cognizant of time. Let's talk about how we support influencers. So we, you know, one thing I mentioned in our prep call and in previous conversations is that like, this isn't the end all and be all of the thing that you want to do. You can't just show up one day and you go, you know what, we're going to stop all of our other marketing efforts and we're going to focus on influencer, go team. Like, it is one channel, part of many. Oh, Trevor, we'll teach you the ways. It'll be okay. Asana's magical. It's magical. But what other programs have you seen in your experience of like, okay, we stand up the influencer system and process, and we got our influencer going. And then what are you running around in terms of supporting that influencer from other marketing channel efforts?
Yeah, I think for me, so I definitely, my background and my sweet spot before going out on my own was the campaign manager role. So I was super lucky early in my career in B2B to kind of work at a company that started out with 200 employees and like 10 or 15 people in marketing. And by the time I left 4 years later, we had 100 people in marketing and 1,200 in the company. So it just, I got to like be aboard this rocket ship. And when I first came in, you know, I'm marketing ops, I'm doing emails, I'm doing campaigns, I'm doing ads, kind of all of it. And then, you know, as we started to be able to hire, my manager was amazing. I was like, what do you not want to do? Let's hire that person. And so I really, so I got to really like hone in on the fact that I really love campaign management. I always say I love being that hub who's kind of, you know, as I described, like working with the people creating the content and then working with the team to get it on the website, social, you know, PR, just getting it out there. So it's kind of, but it's this person that sits in the middle and is like the air traffic controller, I guess. So I think, so that's how I think about this is that's one piece, like whatever they're creating, whether it's the actual content they're creating, whether they're speaking at an event, it's kind of like, this is the message and the person who's going to say it. And then I'm surrounding that and getting that out there on all the different channels. So, I mean, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but yeah, it's kind of all the campaign. Okay. So, I mean, it's the campaign activities that we do for, I would say like standard white papers and webinars and stuff where you're, you know, with content, I mentioned earlier, we like to create derivative content. So it's, you know, can I pull out snippets if it's a webinar? Can I pull out a graph or a chart if it's a white paper and put that on social and say, you know, here's this super interesting statistic. If you want to read, you know, the story around this, here's the white paper you can go look at. Creating blog posts. So there's, you know, a white paper, it's kind of doing the teaser or the free version, putting it on the blog after a webinar, putting a little bit of the summary of the event and saying, do you want to go watch that? Promotion. So it's getting obviously people to go want to fill it out. And I think we talked about, I in my brain, I was taught when I started, like you focus on owned, earned and paid media. So it's, I'm always kind of looking at from the high level, what can we do that we own? What can we pay for? And what can we earn? And so it's, you know, kind of just, I mean, can we create ads and put those up? I'm a big believer in ABM. So most of the companies I work at have some sort of account-based marketing platform. So, you know, we're putting that message in front of those accounts we care about, keeping an eye on activity from the accounts if they're interacting with the content. So I feel like I'm just like dumping my Asana list.
No, I think that's really helpful because the things that I heard in there that really support influencers is social media. Social media newsletter are like the top two things that, you know, the influencer goes out and does a bunch of things, whether that's writing or at an event or on a podcast. And then you take that content and you duplicate it multiple ways across social and email, essentially, which I think is what's really helpful. If you can look at, I'm boiling this down, maybe oversimplifying it, but I think bubbling it back up, right? We got in the weeds, which is great. Now let's bubble it back up. If you can look at an influencer as an ultimate creator for you, right? Who already has an audience, right? It's coupling those two things together. So you got this beautiful creator who also has an audience, who can speak to those folks about what it is that you do through the way that they create, and then being able to take whatever it is that they create and bring it into your own marketing materials and elevating it that way is a beautiful marketing program that I'm seeing more and more of. But it takes an enormous amount of effort. I mean, you have to have... I just talked to David Mundy, who's going to come back on the show. He was on my show years ago. We've been in contact. The creative him and his team are pumping out at Desera is just, I'm like, is this AI? Is this Photoshop? Do you have a graphic designer? Like, what are you doing over there? Because, oh my gosh, it is gorgeous, right? And so when you have that sort of person who can create that kind of content in a white paper, these beautiful white papers about cybersecurity, but marrying it with chess. Like what?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like you need to elevate that in a way and get it out in the world that can couple it down and then rebroadcast it in multiple ways. And so I just, yes to all of this. And if you can think about your creators that way, how magical.
Yeah. Well, and I think, and the other piece that I left out is, or didn't say explicitly, I guess, is the loop back to working with that influencer to take advantage of their channel. And then if I already have a team behind me creating stuff off of what they're doing, it's just like getting it into their hands and making it really easy for them to, like, you know, it's sort of like, you said this, can you just tell your audience that you said it? Or another thing that happened that was really cool and kind of organic was just like being on the prep call with someone and watching him and like the CTO take it up to the industry level, you know, and saying like, and so they're like popcorning off each other of like, oh, I'm connecting the dots here, you know, and then for me to summarize that and be like, can you guys go talk about that on your LinkedIn and just mention each other and then say, we're going to be talking about that more, you know, on this webinar or that kind of thing. Yes. So it's like just looking for those little nuggets and like, you know, telling someone like, can you just go talk about that? You know,
I think that's so helpful. I also think one of the powerful things that I don't know that all companies have is that internal influencer, that internal voice. So when you can couple an outside analyst with an inside expert, oh my gosh, magic, right? Mm-hmm. And cultivating that. And I love what you,
yeah.
Oh, if I could get people on my team to just go hang out on LinkedIn and talk about their experience and the expertise they have, man, would that be, it's really hard to do though, especially with practitioners. They're a bit gun shy that way. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to companies who know they need this thing? They need both, right? They need, because I think that is where like some real magic happens. How do you help build internal influencers? Going off script here.
I think it's, yeah, it's, I think part of it is, well, for me, and I know this is like the most boring answer, but it's almost like, so I have this philosophy and I know not everyone is on the same page as me, but how, I guess what I've learned over the years and what's, I think, made me really successful is that I just kind of focus on nailing down my boring processes. And I think we kind of talked about it before, but it's like, if I have a template for how I do something every single time, it's not that you do it exactly the same every time, but you don't have to like recreate the wheel every time. And so if I say, hey, this is a program that we want to do, and here are the steps that we need to do it, then it's just like, you can get creative within the little space that you're trying to do, but you don't have to think about what are we going to do? It's more like, how are we going to do it? And what are we going to say? And what's important here? And so that's the mentality I think that I carry to my teams, is to say, there's just this task, this, you have to do it. So if, you know, twice a month, you have to come up with something you're doing. But if you kind of know that you have that task waiting for you, like for me, I have so many things that are like buckets where I need to put things. And one of them that I use that has been amazing is with my teams, like when I'm meeting with someone for a one-on-one, we meet every Monday. Well, as you think of things throughout the week that you want to talk about, you just put the thing in the bucket. And so for me, like it's the same with social media. When I think of an idea, I have a little bucket in Evernote that I go put the idea. So I think if you get your team thinking about, this is what I need you to produce, then they're in the shower, they're riding their bike, they're washing the dishes, and they go, oh, I guess I could talk about that.
That's where the ideas come. Social. It's true. That's totally where the ideas come.
Yeah.
I don't get the best ideas when I'm on my bike. I think that's one of the reasons why I love riding my bike, but then I know where to write them down. But that's okay, because I love this idea of you know, having buckets too. I do them in Asana. I have my little fodder board. And I drop ideas on there and then I make it a task. Yeah. So I know that I got to go post it when that happens too. So Evernote, wherever, jot it down, make it happen, y'all.
Yeah. Voice note. Yeah.
The last question I have for you, Lisa, is around measurement, right? I always want to come back to like, how do you know this thing's been successful? So you have these influencers and these analysts that you bring in to help cultivate content and webinars and podcasts, and then reusing that content across social and then having your team bubble it up. But how do you know that that's the right thing to be doing?
So I actually love, because earlier in the chat, Trevor mentioned dashboards. And yes, he, so this is the very quick tangent about this was I posted one of the standard things I do is I create a deck. So after, you know, if I'm running a campaign or a webinar, I have a deck where it's kind of like, here's what we're doing, here's the timeline, you know, yada, yada. But then at the end, I create a dashboard that's just like a visualization or sort of infographic-y, depending how much time I have. So that's what he's referencing, is I had made a, I think it was that one that was a dashboard of my webinar results. And I think, oh, and then I also shared, I had done the whole deck and I did a screenshot. So he was like saying he was trying to zoom in and see all, everything that I had on there on the image. But yeah, so I think, I mean, as far as the, what we're measuring, a lot of it's just sort of the standard, you know, if it's a download page, what kind of traffic did we have? How many downloaded it? Can we optimize the landing page to get more downloads? A lot of times, like now I'm working for some companies that have some nicer, like, Path Factory, or, I'm trying to think of the other one that I use, Folion, which is a competitor, I think, of Cirrus. Cirrus is another one. So it's like, it, instead of PDFs where people are just filling out a form and you email the PDF and you have no idea if they ever look at it, I'm really loving the new tech that allows you to create almost like a white paper, but it's more of an embedded, like, landing page experience where it's like an interactive thing. So I'm loving those because you can actually see what people are consuming. And then, you know, it's just more fun. It's more interactive. And if you're on your phone, you're not like trying to zoom and turn, and like PDFs suck on your phone. So if I can create an experience that's like mobile friendly, you know, and see what, how people are consuming it, win, win, win. So that's one of the things, is just kind of shifting your mindset about how you're creating content so that it makes it easier, not only for your audience to consume it, but to see if it's working. And then, you know, the standard for webinars, it's like, are people coming? Are they staying? Are they participating? Are they downloading your downloadables? And then outside of those, all the standard things you normally measure around a campaign, I think you mentioned it in the prep kind of work, is just kind of the sentiment or the key, you know, brand keyword lift. So a lot of times I'm working with, you know, usually it's an internal team who's measuring that already. So just seeing, you know, can we correlate anything around when we worked with that person? And then I would say the last one is qualitative, where I'm really trying to be super good about, I just see huge value in aligning with my sales teams. So making sure that we're formalizing some kind of program, especially just to say, hey, every time you have, you know, whether it's a discovery call or whatever you call it, can you ask them how they heard about us? And then making that a field in Salesforce, it's very, you know, just like open field. But just to get that idea of, like, you know, people might have seen ads on Facebook or LinkedIn and not remember, but the thing that stood out and made them want to call us might be like, oh, I saw Kevin at this event and he mentioned you, and that's what made me decide to reach out.
I think that's really helpful. Because at the end of the day, you need to know that it's impacting revenue. And there's a lot of correlation things you mentioned, but there's also direct impact, right, from going to an event and then having that open field mm-hmm. and writing who you interacted with, I think is really helpful to give credibility to these. Because at the end of the day, you can tell your board member that you got, you know, you feel based off of the impression and keyword lift volume that you've had that it should have impacted pipeline in this way based off of, you know, a percent of conversion rate optimization on your website. But it's not one-to-one. So there are some nice one-to-one things you mentioned there that I think is really helpful, that we, you know, having that, even that, just that drop down list of referral is huge, huge. Lisa, mm-hmm. I could keep going, but we're at time. I do want to ask you, this has been so helpful because I feel like it's so much more tangible in terms of how, like, specific things people can go do and how they can bring influencers in, from finding them from an analytical standpoint of being an analyst in the field and being experts, then bringing them in from a white paper. Are they writers? Are they speakers? Can, you know, how do they talk to their audience? How do they engage and bring them in that way? And then the way that you did it, which I think is really interesting, is whether a white paper or a webinar is basically a lead generator. So being able mm-hmm. to, you know, from the onset, interact with those influencers in a way that actually generates leads is really fascinating as well. And then measuring it all the way through is pretty magical. I love it. Thank you so much. Before we close out, I do have my people first question, which is, have you picked up any, you know, the world has changed in the last 3 years and we all have found a new experience outside of marketing. So what new hobbies have you picked up given the new world order?
I would say, I mean, I don't know that they're new, but yeah, I kind of, I guess, had more time for, I'm a very like crafty sort of person. And actually I was thinking like, so you can kind of see the edge of it. I'll just take it off the wall. I made a vision board and I actually got together with some friends, and we got magazines and just like spent half a day listening to music and eating food. And so this is, I framed it. It's my vision board. So this was kind of a fun, so this is right up my alley of like, I don't know, just being visual and crafty and stuff and getting together with friends. So that's just one thing. Yeah. And then I started recently, I took a bar class. So it's kind of like a ballet bar, but like Pilates, but standing, and it's kicking my butt, but it's really good.
I left every bar class. I call my mom and I go, I want to die. I would die. Everything hurts. I would die. But man, do I feel great.
I'm shaking. I know, I get the like runner's high from it now. I love it.
Oh, that's so amazing. I do miss bar. I miss bar. Well, Lisa, this was amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you to our listeners, Trevor Van Warden. I appreciate you. Thank you for connecting us. Thank you for hanging out, asking all those amazing questions. If you liked this episode, please like, subscribe, and share. If you have any questions, drop them in the comments. We will get back to you. I pinky swear. And this episode is brought to you by MKG Marketing, the digital marketing agency that helps B2B complex companies grow via SEO, digital ads, and analytics. It's hosted by me, Carrie Gard, CEO and co-founder of MKG Marketing. And if you'd like to be a guest, DM me. Let's hang out. I'd love to chat and have more of these conversations live on Tea Time. Lisa, thank you. Thank you so much.
So fun. Thanks, Carrie.